coming up.
Someone knows what happened, of course, because someone did something. So she's just really hoping that if she keeps Jerry Brown and his name out there, that someone eventually will just admit to what they know.
For Vault Studios, I'm Reed Redmond. You're listening to The Daily Crime.
To get a call in the middle of the 12 in the morning about someone you grew up with from 22 years ago, that he was murdered senselessly in a driveway, just on his phone.
That's the voice of a woman named Chevy Green in a 2016 interview asking for something to be done in the murder case of her cousin, Jerry Brown.
It just doesn't make any sense, and something has to happen.
6 years later, Green is still left not knowing who killed her cousin.
I mean, the other night I got up after midnight or so, which is the time I was half asleep, and I grabbed my keys and ran to the door. I didn't even realize what was happening. It's almost like I was reliving that night of running to the door.
Pain from years ago, still fresh for Chevy Green.
After that phone call, that something had happened.
But she hasn't given up on finding answers and wants to put a spotlight back on Jerry Brown's case.
With all the deaths we've had in Jacksonville, I can't sit here and say, oh, they're not busy. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know what's going on, but don't put them to the bottom of a pile. Don't put them to the bottom of a pile.
Leah Shields is joining us from First Coast News in Jacksonville, Florida. Leah, thanks for coming on.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
You recently spoke to a family member that's begging for justice following the murder of 22-year-old Jerry Brown. First, what did she share with you about Jerry, the kind of person that he was?
Oh, wow. You know, I wasn't here in 2016. I didn't work in Jacksonville then. So getting to meet her and actually seeing Jerry through her eyes was quite emotional, actually. So first, you have to kind of imagine Jerry. I've seen pictures of him smiling. He was a big guy. He was only 22, so a young man. But he was a big guy, and they just described him as a huge teddy bear. He kind of sounded like the backbone of their family. I mean, he lived with his mother and grandmother, took care of his mother. She had breast cancer at the time that he was murdered, and he was taking care of her. He was a church choir singer, and his voice was enormous. I have a video of him singing, and it's powerful. He's a volunteer. He volunteered at his high school mentoring kids.
A 22-year-old mentored children at Raines High School. He sang in the church choir. He worked at a very popular coffee shop in Jacksonville.
He had dreams to be a gospel singer. I mean, he just was, the word they use is joy, and I'd never met him, but you could feel the joy coming from his cousin, Chevy Green, who is trying to keep his name out there, making sure his case doesn't go cold.
I've seen some of the photos you mentioned there in your reporting. I know you've shared some on social media. And hearing about Jerry Brown, this description of someone who brought joy to people, who volunteered, sang in the church choir, it took care of his mother, that doesn't sound like a description of someone with a lot of enemies. And in fact, when First Coast News first covered this case back in 2016, that's exactly what we heard from family, friends, teachers, people who knew Jerry.
Jerry was someone family says had zero enemies.
Never any trouble.
You think about someone passing away because of a street incident like this, Jerry's not the person that comes to mind. To think of Jerry having enemies is rare because he's very selfless. Selfless individual, always giving of himself.
Jerry had awesome character. He would literally do anything for anybody.
Always had a smile on his face.
He was probably one of the most jovial people I've ever met in my life.
He set an example for all of us.
He was always having fun with us, teaching us, mentoring us.
But most importantly, Jerry was innocent.
They said he'd never gotten in trouble with the law before, that he was overall just like an amazing guy. And he's only 22, so young, but people had all these lasting memories of him, all these lasting impressions of him, even if it was just a customer at the cafe that he worked at, which was his family's cafe. The family just said that someone shot the wrong guy. That is what they believe.
There's no way that he could have been, this could have been intentional towards him. It's not possible.
So walk us through what exactly happened on that night on January 28th of 2016.
So earlier that day, you know, he's at choir practice. He went over to a friend's house, helped them paint the wall of their child's bedroom. And then he goes to his aunt's house. He's a family guy. He's always at his family's house. And he goes to leave to go home, which, like I said, he lives with his mother and grandmother. And I was told that he was on the phone with either a friend or a family member, but he's also texting. So he was sitting in his car out front in the driveway. Car's on, you know, getting ready to leave, kind of sending those last minute text messages so you don't have to text and drive, right? And Chevy Green, his cousin, shared this with me, and it's really tough to hear. He was on the phone with someone that she knows and still in contact with, and that person had another call coming in. So he was like, hold on, I'll be right back. Let me get this call. And when the guy dialed back in, you know, got him back, was like, he said, Jerry. And he said all he heard was gurgling. So in between the time of that call while he's sitting in his aunt's driveway, I believe police say it was sometime after midnight, somebody shot him in the artery in his neck. And while he was in his car, Green told me that because it was an artery, there was so much blood, they had to eventually repaint the entire driveway. And there was no saving him. And they don't know if someone, they called it a drive-by. They don't know if someone walked up directly to the car or how they approached the car or if there was a conversation. And the person he was talking to on the phone, Green tells me, has just so much guilt because he was, you know, dialed back over to his other call. And by the time he came back to Jerry, he was gone. And that's those few minutes or few seconds there. They think they could have had answers, but that's all they know about the timeline.
That was it. They walked. So we don't know if walk, drove, we don't know that much, but you could hear the gunshots, and he was shot through the neck and passed away.
It's just so horrific. And, you know, as you mentioned, we don't know if the person walked up, if the person drove up. Does that mean there was nobody around, at least nobody that we know of, that saw this happen?
That is what it sounds like. I mean, I didn't read anything about witnesses back in 2016. I've tried to contact Jacksonville Sheriff's Office about this cold case. You know, when something's a cold case, there's no case number, really. There's no, like, you know, a defendant or anything you can look up on the court dockets, right? There's nothing that's been in court. So I tried to reach out about any updates, and there just hasn't been any public updates. So no witnesses that we know of. It happened in a neighborhood called Grand Park, which does have a high crime rate, but it is just a neighborhood. And after midnight, you know, probably most people are inside their homes.
What have you been able to learn about the investigation into Jerry's killing? You called it a cold case. Has it been active over the past 6 years? Do we know if it's been active over the past 6 years?
You know, I don't know if there is actively a detective on this case. I did email the right people with JSO. I actually even reached out to the state's attorney's office, unsure, you know, who might have this in their hands, and I haven't heard back. The cousin, Chevy Green, has kind of been the advocate for the family since Jerry's mother died, actually, about 6 months after he was murdered. So she's really been the advocate, and she said at one point she was calling every day for updates, but then the last thing she heard was 2019. That was the last time she's heard any updates from police. And she found out in 2019 that the original detectives actually were no longer in the homicide unit. So I was trying to figure out who has this case. And it's unfortunately that it's just, I'm not getting much information, and neither is the family.
You've been out to the home where this happened, the driveway where Jerry was killed. What was that experience like?
It's just another Jacksonville neighborhood. And, you know, the aunt, she knew I was coming to get some video and was perfectly okay with that. But she does not want to speak about this. It's really traumatizing for this family. But yeah, it's just another neighborhood. It doesn't carry the weight of this story, you know? And I think that's what the family sometimes fears, is that things like this can be so easily forgotten. And that's why they want to remind people, come on, someone come with answers, because this happened. And Green did tell me they did have to repaint the driveway because of the blood. And the fact that her family's still living in that house is just, they're resilient, because I don't know if I could do it.
The word you used was traumatizing. My heart goes out to any family that's in this situation of, on the one hand, wanting to bring attention to an unsolved case, but also knowing that doing that means speaking about something that is traumatic to them, I can't imagine how difficult it must be for Chevy Green to keep talking about this, even now 6 years later. But it sounds like she doesn't intend to stop until we know what happened.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. That's because Sir Jerry, when he was murdered, he was taking care of his mother who had breast cancer. And Chevy told me that his mother ended up dying of breast cancer about 6 months after his murder. And her dying wish, she told Chevy, please get justice. We need answers. So this is a really heavy weight on her. She still has PTSD from that night. She told me on the 6th year anniversary, which was just this past January 28th, that she woke up at midnight and started running for her car, grabbed her keys and everything, and then realized, wait a second, it's not that night. She literally went right back to that night in 2016. So she's carrying the weight of this on her shoulders, and I don't think she's going to stop until she gets answers. And I don't know how long that will take.
With any case like this, where there's just so little information, it's so hard to know what it's going to take to get it moving in the right direction. What does Chevy Green think it'll take to get this solved someday?
Right now, she doesn't even know who's on the case. That's the issue. So she's really hoping. There's a new sheriff race coming up, a sheriff election coming up. She's hoping maybe she can put some pressure on that race. And maybe if there is a new sheriff, she's hoping maybe that sheriff will take this case and run with it a little bit more. She really knows it's up to the community. It's up to, someone knows what happened, of course, because someone did something. So she's just really hoping that if she keeps Jerry Brown and his name out there, that someone eventually will just admit to what they know.
For anyone in the Jacksonville area who does know something, where can they direct that information?
I would call Crime Stoppers. That's usually the best source. You can report anonymously as well. That's 1-866-845-TIPS. You, of course, can call the sheriff's office. They have a non-emergency line. I mean, heck, you could reach out to Chevy Green if you know something. I'm sure she'll report it for you if you need to, but definitely call Crime Stoppers.
Leah Shields with First Coast News in Jacksonville, Florida. Thanks for sharing this story.
Yeah, thank you so much for allowing me to share it. The family, by the way, said they were in tears knowing that this would be talked about more and that his name will continue to be circulating.
And thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Crime. We're right here with a new one every day of the week, Monday through Friday. So make sure if you haven't already, you're subscribed to or following the podcast wherever you're listening right now. If you're looking for more podcasts, you can head over to voltstudios.com for a full list of our shows that includes our weekly podcast, True Crime Chronicles. That'll do for this one. Until next time, for Vault Studios, I'm Reed Redmond.